And welcome to another edition of the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. I am your host, Dougie Almeida, from Greenville, South Carolina. Anyway, I'm here in Danger Studios, and I'm lucky to be joined by my two good friends, Mr. Jeffrey Gurian.
Hey, Dougie. Dustin.
And Dustin Chafin. What's up, fellas?
Hey, good to be here.
Good to see you, man.
Welcome
good to
back. See you. Jeffrey, of course, a big part of the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. He was a regular weekly spot on our show with the Unusual Wow. News, which was always a fantastic segment.
Yeah, we always had so much fun with that, Doug. Yeah. Always had lots of fun with that.
Great stories and, come on. And, of course, Dustin, who I tracked, I chased him down in Greenwich Village. I kept trying to bug him to be my friend and book me for years. And he
thank God I don't do that anymore. My life, look how much younger I look. I mean, I do not recommend that for anybody.
Booking a comedy room can age you like a president.
It really can. Comics can be a little aggressive.
Yeah, I remember I'd have Dustin on the podcast, let's talk about, booking. He's like, I'd rather not talk about booking.
I escaped from New York. That's why I'm in LA. I had to get away from it all.
So you don't miss Greenwich Village Comedy Club, huh?
I miss New York comedy sometimes. When I try to go back, I'm, maybe a few times a year is what I plan on doing. But no, I really like it out here because I can kind of, just be a comic and kind of concentrate on my writing and stuff. I'm out here to sell a screenplay and all that. So I feel like, I'd rather be here. And I got a pool and, comics aren't harassing me.
So. Yeah, you can't beat that. The LA life is wonderful.
I like it. I do. A lot of people, don't like it. I dig it. It's fun.
It's got to be an incredible difference of going from a little apartment to the wide open spaces of California.
Oh, yeah. We went from 400 square feet to about 900. And if we feel like, we don't have to say excuse me on the way to the kitchen, it's fantastic.
And that's why whenever I would go to New York, people especially with comedy, are you going to move to New York? I'm like, listen, I love it for about a week or two, and then I got to get out. I mean? It's just too much. At first, oh, it's great. I'm going to go downstairs and get something to eat. I'm going to go here, and, I don't have to get a car. And then after a couple of weeks, you're like, I need to breathe.
I miss a little bit of the food. I definitely miss the pizza. They have a Joe's Pizza out here, but it's still not the same,
Yeah, it's never the same.
Yeah.
Dougie, you left Florida, and now I'm looking for a place in Florida.
Well, you can have my old spot.
He's got that shirt in the back. He's ready. Yeah.
I got a second. New York is just so crazy. Just people want to leave. I don't want to leave for good. I want to keep my place in New York, but I want to get a second place in Florida just to hang. Maybe.
Smart.
I want to be in a place that has a clubhouse where I can produce shows, because lately I've been producing shows at the Cutting Room in New York.
Very cool room.
And I like upscale venues rather than just a regular comedy club. It's so much nicer. It's so much nicer when people can order dinner and drinks, and it's a real like the old time nightclubs. I really like that. So that's the kind of thing I want to do in Florida once in a while. That's my goal, to be in a place where I can do that.
Do you have a general idea what part of Florida you want to look at, or is?
I'm looking at three areas. Boca del Rey and Boynton Beach.
That's kind of the same area. Just so it's
come on, you're too young for Boca. Come on, yeah. Jeffrey. You can't do that yet.
I'm not going to Century City, but people tell me that those areas. I don't really know Florida, man. I'm going by what people tell me. What's a fun area?
Naples is cool. I like Naples. That was fun.
I don't even know. I used to go to South Beach, and I heard South Beach now is bad. It's taken over a lot of crime, a lot of gangs. I don't want that. So I want to be in a gated community that has a clubhouse, because in those clubhouses, they do shows. Mm-hmm. And that would be really cool. And there's a lot of comics that I know from New York who moved down to Florida. So I think there's a vibrant comedy scene down there. And it's just something that I feel like I want to do.
Yeah, so, we were thinking about it. We were going to wait till the bubble bursts on the real estate market by next year.
Yeah, it's really high now. Yeah, it's really high. Prices are very high.
Looking about getting a condo or something to keep our residents down there, and just go back in the winter kind of thing. But I got to tell you, the more I go back, I missed it when we first moved here. I'm like, oh, I missed, Then I went back in July And I got off the plane and I started sweating my cojones off. I'm like, oh, I do not miss this humidity. And then, of course, dealing with traffic. And then just once I got used to this area and how the people are, then I went back to Florida. Like, I was just in Fort Myers on the West Coast, which is just north of Naples on the West Coast of Florida. And Fort Myers is like, like Naples is here. And then Fort Myers, I mean, you know what I mean? It's like the Clampets left Fort Myers to go to Naples. You know what I mean? It's just one of those towns. But geez, you know, I'm driving and people are cutting you off. And I kept saying, this doesn't happen in Greenville. This doesn't happen in Greenville.
Yeah, I haven't seen one dick on the subway. It's been great. It's like.
It happens in New York, I'll tell you that, man. Yeah. New York is in a crazy place right now. I've never seen it so bad. Things are really weird. Still so many stores out of business, a lot of restaurants out of business for good.
When did you get there, Jeffrey? When were you in New York? What year was it?
Oh, man, I moved to the city in 85, so I've been here a long time.
And was it rough in the 80s? I heard it was...
I'm always from New York. I was living in the 70s. No, things were great then. Okay. And just until the pandemic, you know. I don't know if you know, I had COVID, double pneumonia. I was in the hospital. And when I got out, the pandemic changed everything in New York. You know, people are just going crazy here. The main problem is the crime. They don't hold anybody. You know, I'm sure you read about it. The guy, you know, that woman pushed a woman into a moving train.
Yeah.
But it happens about once a week. Somebody gets thrown on the tracks. You can't go anywhere. I won't go on the subway. I drive every place I have to go or else I don't go. You know, you can't even take a bus.
This is like, I always had a romanticism of New York, but the only movies I was watching was like The Warriors, Taxi Driver, you know, these horrible crime-ridden movies, and I still was like, that place looks so cool. Look at the guy with his face painted and the Yankees hat, the baseball bat. Like, it was just this weird thing as a kid. I was like, I got to get a vest and go to New York and be a warrior. I had no idea that it was
real.
Well,
I grew up in the Bronx, and when you lived in the Bronx, going to Manhattan, people would actually get dressed up years ago. It was a big deal to go to Manhattan. You know, Broadway shows and all. It was like, if you grew up in a borough, Manhattan was something special. So I couldn't wait to move here. And when I moved here, man, I mean, well, as I said, it was great for a very long time. But until they change the administration, it's not going to be good. They have to get somebody who's going to be tough on crime and get these people off the street, because just attacking people at random, it's insane. It's absolutely insane.
Well, 85 must have been amazing for comedy. Like, you were there when it was booming, baby.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. All the clubs were happening and, you know.
So cool. I missed that whole thing. I was like, I would love to, you know, be a part of that.
Yeah, and at the time I was living half a block from Catch.
Perfect.
So I would spend my time between, and in those days, Louis Ferrando was the bartender at Catch. That's how far back that goes. And that's the year that Eddie Murphy discovered Chris Rock at the comic strip.
Nice.
So I wound up doing the book on the comic strip, and Chris wrote the introduction, and that was the story, that he was a 19-year-old kid, you know, doing late night in exchange for setting up chairs in the club, and Eddie was the biggest star in the world. So in those days, it was just the improv, Catch, and the comic strip that came along in 76.
And Dangerfield.
That's right. And unfortunately, I don't know if you know, Dustin, Dangerfields went out of business after 50 years.
Yeah. It was rough. I wrote a whole article on it. Yeah,
it's still for rent. Nobody's touching the place. It's still for rent.
Really pissed me off because I just got past there in November.
That's how it always is. You know what I mean? You get past it a club and, like, you know, the bartender's booking it now. You're like, I should have chipped. But Dangerfields was one of the reasons I was okay leaving New York, because it was one of these weird places that I loved more than all the other clubs. And I'd passed the Cellar and all these clubs. And Dangerfields just, I don't know, there was something about the history of it being the oldest club in Manhattan. And then all the stories. And Tony was great. He'd tell you Kinison stories and all this, you know, stuff about the club. I just loved it. I thought it was such a really cool place to do comedy, even though sometimes it'd be like 10 people. It still felt like showbiz. You know, the waiters had red jackets on. They had the little lamps on the tables. I loved it.
I was writing for Rodney back in 1980.
Oh, wow. And, that's amazing.
And so when I came back to the club in recent years, you know, they never changed it. It was just the way it was when Rodney was.
That's what I love about it, yeah.
And I was sitting in his dressing room alone, just reminiscing, you know, just to be back there. And Tony walked by. You know, Tony was his partner since 1969, from when they started. And he said to me, Jeffrey, I can picture you sitting there with Rodney writing jokes together. Nice. And it was so amazing. It meant so much more to me than me saying to him, hey, Tony, do you remember me sitting here with Rodney? But the fact that he said that to me was really cool. And I was like, yeah, we used to hang out backstage, just me and Rodney writing shit. And he would tell me jokes like he'd be like, Jeff, what's the difference between Jews and Italians? I said, I don't know, Rodney, what's the difference? He goes, they both take a leak in the sink, but the Jews take the dishes out first.
Yeah, that joke could be told today.
These days, thank God for Chappelle, right? He's standing up to cancel culture.
Well, that leads us into one of our first topics of discussion with, you know, thank you, Jeffrey. Always being
that was smooth. That was nice.
That's why I miss Jeffrey on the show, because otherwise I'm sitting going, what the fuck do I do next?
I'm going to get into that.
I just have such respect for those people that can't be canceled, you know, like a Joe Rogan, like a Dave Chappelle. You know, that's why we do what we do. You know, we are the last bastions of freedom of speech. You know what I mean? And, you know, when you watch that and, you know, I watched clips of the special and, you know, this is the second time he's done that, right? I think one of the last specials he did, he was getting trouble for, you know, talking about gay people or something like that, right? And he had that famous line in the response. She goes, you can't say that word, you know. He goes, well, you let me say the N-word, you know. And she goes, well, you're black, you know, or something like that. He goes, you know, well, I, you know, he said, well, I ain't no nigger, you know what I mean? It was like, it was great, you know. And it was because, you know, that's the fear we have. People are so damn thin-skinned, you know, and fickle that, you know. But I don't know about you guys, but I'm starting to see a little difference because, you know, that people speaking out about against it, you know, like. Meaning, speaking for Dave Chappelle, you know what I mean? Like, hey, you know what I mean? Like, everybody thinks this, everybody feels this. I don't have any ill will for any human being. I think everybody has the right to choose whatever they want to do. You know, if somebody is gay, God bless them. You know, that's who am I? You know, I'm not. You know, but that's Well, there was that time in South Beach I took some ecstasy, but that's different. Yeah, I'm not full fledged, but you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? It's like. But it's amazing that if a group of folks want to be treated equally and understood, then they really should also be able to understand the feelings of others.
Yeah, they never hear the entirety of the message in the joke. They always hear the buzz part of it. They always hear the gay part. They always hear something that feels offensive. But if you listen to the entire joke, he's doubling it where it's just like, you know, it's the hypocrisy in the joke. And that's what people don't learn from the joke. And they don't realize that, you know, it's his way of making something heavy lighter. And so that's what comedy is. And I mean, you can make a movie about Hitler and like, it's like Hitler was terrible, but people can go see Hitler being terrible and just leave. Why can't you just hear Dave Chappelle doing something you may not agree with, but he can still do it. You don't cancel the Hitler movie. You give it an Oscar because, you know, it's like, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I think of Mel Brooks' History of the World.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So funny. So funny.
There's only a couple of comics who are approaching controversial issues these days. And I like to mention, you know, I also write about the comedy scene. And, you know, Mark Norman and Andrew Schultz, man, they take on very controversial topics. But they're such good writers and they're so smart that they make the audience see the other side of it. You know, not everybody does that. I just talk about shit that I think is funny. I don't put out a message, but there are some people that do, and I admire them. You know, I mean, it's very tricky these days. I had a Chinese girlfriend for many years, and I used to do material, you know, but it was like positive material. Like, you know, Chinese people are the smartest people in the world. They have to be. They figured out how to speak Chinese, you know? And so... When there's Chinese people in the audience, they love it. I'm not making fun of them. I'm saying good stuff about them, that it's like, you know, the Rubik's Cube of languages. But these days, sometimes I'm nervous to do it because people in the audience think that they have to make a sound when you do that. Oh, like that. And, you know, you have to have a comeback for it. I'll do it depending on the audience that I'm performing in front of. But who needs that kind of, you know, adversity?
Yeah. I mean, I think audiences, it really varies on the audience. I remember one time I was at MIT and we were doing this show where it was kind of celebrating kind of, you know, African-American studies. And it was like people from black, you know, people from Harvard and different associations. And it was like a really kind of high end African-American thing. And they needed one white guy. And I was the guy, probably not the best choice. And so it was Artie Fuqua, it was Harris Stanton, it was Will Silvance, and, you know, we're all in there. And I got on stage and, you know, I do this joke about being part Native American, and, you know, and then I just did this other part and I said, at least black people got to travel. And it was like this whole thing. And like, you know, everybody went crazy. I got booed for about, you know, about 2 minutes. And, you know, it was this whole thing. And I was like, and then 3 weeks later, I did it on Showtime on White Boys in the Hood, and I got an applause break in front of a black crowd, you know, that was there to see the comedy. So it's like, you know, each crowd is going to be different. And these people that are covering it, I don't know if you went down the wormhole on YouTube about these people, these reporters that were like kind of going in on it. And I was like, oh, you don't have a sense of humor. This comedy's not for you. And that's the thing. A lot of people can't handle comedy. They don't know how to process it. You know, when somebody says, I don't like jazz, I was like, you know nothing about music. Same with comedy. It's like, if you get offended, you know nothing about comedy.
Yeah.
I had a very similar experience, Dustin. I was the opening night act for the Martin Luther King Comedy Festival in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn.
I love it already.
And you know what? So I was Patrice O'Neill's co-host on the Black Phillip Show.
I remember
so
all that,
very
yeah.
often, I'm the only white guy in a black crowd.
Sure.
So I went up and I did my thing. And I was about to end on my regular stuff, and I just saw an opportunity. And I said to the audience, are you guys into racial humor? And they all said yes. And I did some material. I did some material on black girls' names, and they loved it. And so I left the stage, and I went to my seat. And then I went back on the stage, and I asked the host. I said, I need the mic for a minute. And I said, you know what? I really have to thank you people for being so cool. And allowing
you
me
people.
To do like that. Yes,
you people.
Really I need to thank you guys for being so cool and allowing me to do that. I said, because I look at comedy as a healing force, and that brings us all together. When we can laugh at ourselves and at each other, people know when you're coming from a good place or when you're coming from a place of hatred. If you're an intelligent person, you use your intuition, and you know. And I wound up getting a standing ovation with that. And you know, I did it because it was very important to me to say that. I wanted to thank them specifically because I did that in Atlanta. You know, I was in Atlanta. I did a show at the Improv, and I wanted to do another set. And I called Shantae Wayans because she's a good friend. And the whole Wayans family came from Atlanta. So she calls me back and she goes, I got your spot, but I don't know if you're going to want to do it. I'm like, where is it? She goes, Uptown Comedy Corner, Sunday night. She goes, even black comics are nervous to go there. I'm like, I'm doing it. So I walked in. The entire club turned around to look at me. They told me afterwards they thought I must have been a Hollywood agent because no white guys ever just walk in there. I did the material. I did my act, and I did that racial material. And I got a lot of laughs, but one woman in the back yelled out, shoot him.
That's a term of endearment, just so you know.
Yeah.
It's like when they call you stupid. Yeah.
When I got off stage, these guys walked me to my car to make sure that I got there safe. But they liked the show. The whole audience really liked it. But this one woman yelled out, shoot him. That was it.
Like Dustin mentioned, there's trigger words. Like we were doing this in Vero Beach. It was a country club, right? So we kind of wear it. It was me, Lenny Travis, and a buddy of mine, Perry Sack. And
is that trigger with an A or trigger with an ER?
Yeah, ER. You know, I'm trying to be.
But it was
a WASPy crowd, you know, to be honest with you, and in a sense, but it was everybody had coats, dinner before, and so Perry goes up there serving dinner. It's a brutal venue because they're serving dinner as he's up there. It was just tough, and nobody was even listening. Then I go up, you know, and I tell a joke which is considered an anti-racist joke. It's like, you know, like you said, you know, it's friend of mine's racist, says, I can't believe the names black people name their kids, Lucretia, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, that's funny, you should say that, dick. You know, it's an anti-racist joke. And I'm up there, and the guy, one of the main guys of the country club, is like, oh my God, he's telling these jokes, there's black people here. And Lenny Travis goes, you want me to call security? And the guy just didn't recognize that it wasn't racist material. It's making fun, you know? It's really dangerous when we do that, when you get nervous about telling a joke, because if you do get nervous, I found that it can become questionable, right? Like, if you don't just do it full force, it has that look like you're nervous about doing it. Like, I was just in El Paso, Texas, at the comic strip there, and, you know, I tell a joke, which is a wordplay with wet vac and wetback, you know what I mean? And it has nothing to do with Mexican joke, but they loved it. And I find that people of ethnicity don't have a problem with it. It's generally
people that are offended for them. Yeah.
It's just disgusting.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a way to do it. I think, you know, I started off, you know, I had people like Steve Marshall and Lisa Lampanelli would buy jokes for me and stuff. And so I feel like, you know, I was around that Nick DiPaolo era of comedy, and people were taking these crazy risks and saying whatever the hell they wanted. And I think it has changed a little bit. If you want to get booked back to a room and not lose the crowd, there is a way. It's a little different. I see somebody like Steve Marshall, who I love dearly. I know we all do. And to see him, sometimes he'll just go at these crowds. I'll be like, I can't even believe that he's going, doing the same kind of material with this newer generation. But he's so committed to it. And just like with Jeffrey, it's like he has a message about it being, I love everybody. And it's like, I feel like if there's a message, or, you know, you have a way that you can kind of slide it in there and not make it offensive. And I also say, if you put something on yourself, like whenever I talk about race, I make fun of being from Texas, I make fun of rednecks, then I talk about other people. So I think that's the way to do it, too, is put it on yourself first. You can't just be a guy that's just slamming every race and not make fun of yours.
You think that's a good – that's an important part of it? Because, like, you know, I'll be self-deprecating in the beginning.
Yeah, I think so. Put it on yourself. Absolutely.
Yeah, you make fun of yourself first, and then anything else. What Lisa Lampanelli did for many years, she would make fun of herself first and then everybody in the audience, and they loved her. She made fun of gay people, and that was her biggest charity, was a gay charity. And they knew it, and the gay crowd loved her.
And everything rhymed, so things are less offensive when they rhyme. You know, seriously, like her material was always rhyming jokes. You know?
Yeah,
that I never realized that, but that's an interesting point.
Yeah. I was thinking about one of the clips I saw was when he was talking about, you know, having sex with a woman who's, you know, transitioned or whatever they call it, you know, and he goes, you know, we know it's a vagina, but it's really not. You know, it's not, and it's just like. You know, it's funny because, you know, that's like a question. It wouldn't be ignorant, or it wouldn't be bad, right, to ask somebody, like, let's say somebody asks another man, like, hey, would you have sex with somebody that you found out was a man at one time and now is a woman? Would you have sex, right? And, you know, if somebody says, you know, you can't call that person homophobic. You can't call them transphobic. You can't. Yeah. That's just.
Yeah, but if you don't tell me that you used to be a man, then that's deceit. And so that's on you. Like, I feel that's something that should be brought up right away. It's like your credit score and you used to have a penis. You know, there are two things on a first date.
I had a guy send somebody to my house recently this well-known producer is producing a feature script that I wrote. And this photographer sent this gorgeous girl to my house. And she was fantastic. She looked just like the part that I wrote. And I happened to look her up on the internet, and it says she's one of the top transgender models. But I would have never, ever known. No one could ever know. And when he found out, he was embarrassed that he didn't tell me. And I'm like, I was sitting there looking at her afterwards, and she was absolutely gorgeous. Absolutely, very tall, but just absolutely gorgeous. And I don't know if you saw it. There was an article in the paper recently. A few days ago, I cut it out.
You cut it out? We're talking about.
Well, listen, yes, a medical journal wants to refer to women as bodies with vaginas. I'm not making that up. And they got such flack for that that they had to change the cover. But that was the concept, to refer to. You know how a lot of people, They want to refer to women as birthing people. Have you heard that?
Yeah.
Birthing people. This is bodies with vaginas. It's out of control. It's ridiculous. And they want to change men and women to people. Now, even if you're trans, you're a trans man or a trans woman. What's wrong with saying men and women?
Well, they
just, and they're changing they just it to also, people. Trans men and women. And
they just also announced in California, by the way, your new state there, Dustin, that toy store is going to have a gender neutral toy section.
Oh yes, oh, wow. Yeah, I saw that too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's a lot. I mean. When I was a kid, it was Evel Knievel and Barbie, and neither one of them had genitalia. I mean, Barbie had boobs, that was it, you know? But it's, yeah, I don't know. The problem is we give they too much power, whoever these people are that are making these decisions.
Yes, I always wonder about that. Who is that? They usually have 10 followers on Twitter, you know?
It's kind of like people that run stand-up comedy. It's like, who are these people?
Yeah. You know what I
mean? Right, who's the they that they're
who's
afraid
picking
of?
People, you know?
Yeah, it's I think it's crazy. And, you know, I always look at things as numbers being a fiduciary. And, you know, if we're going to be, you know, I look at, you know, that basically, in a sense, based on the global community, get the gay community is anywhere between 5 to 7% of the population. Transgender is anywhere between 0.5 to 1% under that, you know, and I just don't put that much credence in that small of a group of folks. You know what I mean? Like, do what you want. You know, my nephew is transgender. He was born a girl, now he's a boy, you know, God bless him. He needs help, anything like that. And I know there's challenges to it. So, you know, I always say, you know, God bless all the things you're going through and what that must be like. I don't know, but you know what I mean? But at the same time, you know, if I'm, you know, as a human being, if somebody walks in the room, who's like, there was it Miss Nevada, somebody who won Miss Nevada or Miss Arizona, she was trans, you know, and I'm like, God dang, that's fantastic. Cause Think about the woman who came in second place. You know what I mean? It's like you got beat by a dude. You know what I mean? And but I applaud that. I'm like, holy shit. You know what I'm saying? But it's the ones that when they walk in and they're like, ah, you know, and it's like, you can't, like, if you want me to really go along with it, I mean,
well,
that's where
I hear what you're saying, but you should still be able to make fun of it. We grew up on MASH. Klinger was a punchline, so it's like, you know, he had the wig and the dress and like, so a lot of it is you know, it's like Chappelle can talk about whatever he wants. He's the next George Carlin. He's one of the best we have. And speaking of George Carlin, I remember I saw George Carlin working out a special in Vegas. He walked 15 people. Because he was doing like religious material, and then he just yells at them as they're walking out the door. How do you not know what I do? And he's like, but everybody gets offended. Who gives a shit? Do whatever you want. I think just, you know, if you make them laugh, who cares? If like who's ever watching like Dave Chappelle and watching that audience? If that audience is laughing, he's doing it right. Now, if everybody, you know, I don't know.
One of the videos I watched, they showed some lady some. Well, look like a woman in the audience, just like she was
I mean, there's always that person, you know?
Yeah, like, what the fuck?
And that's the person you concentrate on in comedy.
Isn't that true? Why is that? Somebody posted that, and we were just talking about other comics. Like, everybody in the room could be laughing, but that one person sitting in the audience, like, you know, you just look at them, and you're like, fucker. Yeah, you know, what's wrong with this person?
I think one day you get over that, you become a better comic. I think that's a bad club habit. You know what I mean? We all have it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You see these guys, like he was talking about Mark Norman, Schultz, they don't give a shit about anybody. And that's why they're successful. It's like once you concentrate, we're all concentrating on that one guy. It's like, yeah, you got to get over that.
I basically ignore the crowd.
Yeah.
I think that's great.
I don't do crowd work because when you do that, very often you open yourself up to heckling. Because as soon as you start engaging, some drunk schmuck thinks that you want him to yell out to you or engage you in conversation.
I mean, sometimes it's helpful if you're in a crowd that's tight. I know Dougie and I do it a little bit, and it's, you know, depends on the crowd. But
no, if you're a host, it's good to warm up the audience. I was at a show recently. I did a show.
We're headlining, but anyway. we don't shine shoes no more, Tony.
Shine box.
I was doing a show recently where a 50-year-old woman came in and she was already drunk, and she was with two female friends and they were all drunk. And from the time she sat down, she was yelling out shit. And when the host came up on the stage, instead of telling her to be quiet, he engaged her, which was a very big mistake. And she ruined his whole act. It got to the point where he was saying to her, shut the fuck up. And she just wouldn't be quiet. She was giving him two fingers like this. The first comic comes on the stage and she does the same thing now because she thinks she's encouraged and she thinks she's being funny and she's ruining the whole show. And the host says to me, are you ready to handle that woman? And I'm sitting there, I'm fucking furious because I'm like, we all work so hard on our sets and I'm not going to let some drunk fool mess up my set. And I said to him, I'm not going to handle it. I'm just not going to deal with it.
Yeah.
And I went up there. She ruined the first two. I went up there and the woman didn't make a peep. I did my whole set and she didn't make one fucking sound. And when I came off, they said, how'd you do that? And I said, I think she felt that from me, that I was not going to handle that. People are very sensitive to energy. You know, as a comic, we work off the energy of the room and people can feel that. And I really feel like that she saw that there was no way I was going to deal with that with her. And I don't engage that kind of stuff. And it worked out great.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to own your space when you're on the stage. Own Absolutely. Your power.
We had a guy in Fort Myers at Laugh-In this weekend. Sean Jones was headlining. And he was just like yelling stuff out during the show and stuff. And, you know, I dealt with it for a bit and I handled it, made a laugh. And then he kept doing it. And Sean just kept destroying the guy, you know, and even got to the point like, you lost, dude. Like, you know, people are laughing at you, you know, at this point. He's like, he just didn't care. So he went outside to get a smoke. And when the other guy was on stage, I was out there. He's like, I know that makes things better. I'm like, hey, man, here's a little note. If your face isn't on the show flyer, nobody came to hear or see you. You know what I mean? Just keep that simple.
Whenever I headline a club, I always say, look, I'm going to give you like a code word. If I say, hey, man, could I get a Diet Pepsi or something? That means throw this guy out.
Right.
So it's like, it's important that the comics have to know that this could happen. So I always make an arrangement with the security or whoever. But a lot of these clubs are too cheap to have security. That's a lot of the problems, you know.
Yeah, that's another thing. A lot of clubs don't have security. I did one thing once that really worked for me. I stopped the show and I introduced the heckler. I said, ladies and gentlemen, we have a famous heckler in the house. And he's been heckling for many years. Sir, how long have you been heckling? Stand up. And then that shut him up. But most of the time, I don't get anything like that. Because I don't stop a minute. When I hit the stage, I come on with a lot of energy. Some people come on very slow and they kind of, it's almost like they're welcoming hecklers. You know, I don't think you can engage.
Well, not always. I mean, somebody like Sam Morril isn't welcoming hecklers. He just has a slow energy. Like that's just what he does. Some guys is different, you know.
Yeah, he's a sharp comic.
Yeah, crowds are just dicks. Let's just, a lot of times they're too drunk. That's part of the problem. It's like, you know.
That's it.
Here's the thing. Yeah, we force alcohol. We're like, you better behave. Okay, but buy two drinks. Like, it's a setup. We create the whole problem. We're like, I can't believe they're talking. Get your shots. Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
You know, I think it is interesting to have that because a lot of clubs will say, well, these are my regulars. I'm like, well, fuck, you know, like that guy said when I was talking to him, he goes, I'm never coming back. I'm like, as a comic, I don't give a shit if you ever came to another show, if that's the way you're going to be. You know what I mean?
You promise? Yeah. Make the guy promise.
Exactly.
I'll never come back.
Exactly. Well, let's move on to the next topic. This is interesting. You know, I don't have any kids. I don't know. Dustin, you don't have any kids.
No.
I have kids. I have kids.
But the school board situation, you know, I thought it was interesting. The craziness we're seeing in school boards, you know what I mean? A lot of this stuff came out when they brought up critical race theory and parents were pissed. And it even got to the point where parents found out there's books that the kids are reading about homosexuality and stuff. And parents like, listen, you know what I mean? That's something I'd rather go over with my kid. And that's all great if you do it. But if you don't, then, you know, kind of thing. But basically, the concern now has been that the school board now is trying to scare people to come to school board meetings by threatening the FBI and getting them checked out and looked at. You know, I don't want to get, in a sense, political. I mean, you guys talked about de Blasio. I think we can all agree de Blasio is a putz.
The worst. Okay. Worst mayor of all time. Oh, yeah. He's ruined the city.
Right. Now, obviously, I am Republican, and I was not happy about the Biden win, and I know how people feel about Trump. The only thing good about Biden is he's screwing up so bad that he's kind of paving the way for Republicans in the next few elections. Now, but what I am concerned about is this, you know, when you go to a school board, you get to call the FBI when people are just not happy. You know, do you think parents should be able to attending school boards and be able to be upset with this? I mean, I don't know if you're following this thing that's going on, but
I follow it very closely.
Yeah.
Very, very
closely. What are they against? Yeah. Like what's being taught, like certain things or what?
Parents are in an uproar. They're teaching white children to be embarrassed for being white, that they're systemically racist, and they're dividing kids into groups so that they start hating each other in school, which is ridiculous. And the parents have a right to say what's being taught. And in some states, they're saying that the parents have no right to interfere in what's being taught. The parents have every right to interfere. You don't want your children being taught things that are incorrect, you know, and that are making children feel different or guilty about themselves.
Right.
No one asked to be white any more than anyone asked to be black or any other race. You got what you get, whoever your parents were. And, you know, and it's a terrible thing to threaten parents with the FBI. Is ridiculous.
Yeah,
that's the direction that our country is going in, and it's very scary. Censorship, you can't say anything. They want to check your banks. If you make over $600 deposit, they're going to follow your money. Come on. I mean, where are we going? Whoever thought that America, you know, that could happen in the United States of America?
Aside from
why do these people even want that? What's the attraction to socialism or communism? I don't get it. Well, how so much of the country is open to that?
Well, the problem is that, you know, they've been in the last decade or so, they've been demonizing two people, the wealthy and those who are of faith. We've seen demonization of that. And, you know, and these young people, and it's always the young people. You know, whenever I watch these things on social media, like this country sucks, they probably never left their own borough or their own city. You know, they always say how bad this country is. Meanwhile, they've never stepped foot out of this country. And, you know, so you have that. And it's always these young people have never acquired anything. You know, they've been living off their parents and that kind of shit. So they want the government to do the same thing. And, you know, aside from censorship, it's about conformity, you know, which kind of leads into the mandates. You know what I mean? And again, like somebody asked me if I'm vaccinated. I'm not vaccinated, but not because I think it's going to put shit in my body. I'm not vaccinated because I've had COVID. So my doctor has said to me, you don't have to, you know, I believe you got natural immunity. So, and the problem that this country is now having is that the current administration is demonizing those who feel that they don't want to have it for their own relief, your own freedom of choice to try to push something. You know, look what happened. Southwest Airlines, you know, I flew it this weekend. Thank God I got to where I was going. Thousands of flights canceled.
Two thousand flights were canceled.
Right, supposedly because of weather, which was bullshit. Because in the old days, you can get away with that. Now people are looking at their app, going, "Weather's fucking fine. What are you talking about, weather?" You know what I mean? And
staff shortages, what they said today.
Yeah.
On Newsmax, if you watch Newsmax, where they only tell the truth, they told you that they claimed that it was the weather, but it was really staff shortages. And I'll tell you something else. A friend of mine from Canada called me. I'm vaxxed, even though I had COVID and I was in the hospital with COVID. Were you very sick, Dougie, or did you get a mild case?
Yeah, I only lost my sense of smell, which made 2020 the year for ass eaters. Just want to clear that. Just want to make sure.
Well, my cardiologist told me to get the shot anyway, even though I was in the hospital with COVID, double pneumonia. I was really sick. And they gave me hydroxychloroquine, and that saved me. And I talk about that every time I'm on anything. I had put myself on Z-Pak because on the third day that I was sick, it went to my throat. And whenever I get a cold or anything, I was hoping it was just a cold. I keep antibiotics in the house. I didn't remember that Z-Pak also protects your lungs. And you're supposed to take it for 5 days. I stayed on it for 10 days because I was getting sicker and sicker. I was sick for 2 weeks before I had to call an ambulance because I couldn't take it anymore because it was at the height of the pandemic And they were warning people to stay away from the emergency room because you could get even sicker by going there. I just couldn't wait anymore. I was that sick.
Have you been vaccinated, Dustin?
I have, you know, and I didn't get COVID. I also feel a lot of comedians did pretty well with the situation. It was funny. Brad Paisley was talking to a friend of mine, and they were talking about how entertainers are somewhat almost immune because we're around so many people. So I feel like I, you know, maybe I got more spots than you guys. So that's why I didn't catch COVID. But but I feel like, well, back to the school thing. It's like, yeah, the education system is ridiculous. And, you know, the things we teach, I didn't learn anything in school. You know, I wish, you know, they should be teaching things like how to, you know, financial planning, how to, you know,
yes,
and exactly. Maybe zeroing in on when somebody's good at something, maybe pushing them in that direction instead of like, you know, you catch a kid tagging a wall, maybe send them to art school. You know what I mean? Like find a way to kind of motivate people to be good at what they're naturally talented in. And I think that's a problem. And being somebody whose grandfather lived his life and died on an Indian reservation in Oklahoma, you know, it's, you know, the way the Indians and the Native Americans were portrayed in the history books were just ridiculous. I mean, as a kid, I just thought, oh, everybody got along. They ate turkey together. That's not what happened at all. So I think there definitely needs to be more openness to, you know, kind of how things are taught. I think that definitely the books now are, you know, it's very zeroed in. And the fact that Republican, Democrat, I don't give a shit about that. And the thing is, you should keep prayer out of school. You should keep all, it should just be very neutral. But at the same time, you know, we need to teach other things, you know.
A lot of the problems, a lot of the complaints are that the teachers are pressing their ideology on the students.
Yeah, which that shouldn't happen at all.
You know, you see videos of people going, you're Trump is this or this or that. And you're like, you know, you're like, look, man, you know what I mean? If I had a child and they came to me and said that, hey, the teacher was telling my kid about one politician over the other, you know, I would have her fired. I mean, like, hey, man, who the fuck are you? Like, you know, unless this is a civics class, you know, teach the basics. You should not be talking about what's happening now. You can make references of it, but you should not be favoring one side or the other. But these, you know, and these liberal arts colleges, like when I went to college, you know, it's like what I realized, like, holy shit, are all my teachers atheists? You know, like, because I took a lot of philosophy courses too, you know. So they were telling me, I remember when I got out of, when I was my second year, third year of college, I remember going home and I remember talking to one of my dad's friends who was very patriotic, you know, was a veteran and stuff. And I'm like, well, this country sucks. You know, we puppet other countries and we fucking manipulate. And he's like, shut the fuck up, you little punk. You know what I mean? I can remember because I was a know-it-all. You know what I mean? And you see this in the youth today. But it's just crazy. And I just think that, you know, it's time, like everything, you know, politicians, these school boards, there's career people in those positions. They need to be pushed. There needs to be congressional limits, term limits. You know, we got to get these people that are just sucking up the power and living off it. And it's just horrible.
Also, we as a community, we need to mentor more. You know, we need to find ways to help the youth as a whole. It can't just be the teachers. You can't just leave them in charge of all our kids' ideas and thoughts. We have to help as a community. And that's what nobody's doing. Yeah. Nobody's going out of their way to help. And, you know, the boys clubs, I was at a boys club and, you know, my parents were having some problems and stuff. And I learned to box there and I got a sense of discipline and, you know, it's like, it changed my life. And it's like, if I hadn't had that, you know, I think it would have gone down a different path, you know?
One of the things I want to touch on what Jeffrey said earlier was, you know, with this critical race theory is that, you know, white people are thought to be, you know, they're all, you know, they're just wrong and they're racist, this and that. But it's also this critical race theory is also teaching black kids that they're victims and that, you know, so you mentioned the Boys Clubs of America. I was a member of that. And I used to mentor young men at the Boys Clubs of America when I was in my early 20s.
That's great.
And I mentored three young black men. And to me, it was always, you know, they were, you know, you guys have it. I'm like, hey, man, my lesson was that. I'm like, don't believe that shit. I go, you know, you got a million reasons. Everybody has a million reasons to fail in everything they want to do. There's only one reason you're going to succeed, and that's you and your personal drive and your beliefs in yourself. So if you buy into all this shit, it doesn't matter what color you are. It doesn't matter any of that stuff. You buy into it, that's where you're going. And that was the biggest, that was the disheartening thing I would see. It's like one of the kids, this kid Arthur's parents were like, oh, you know, you ain't ever going to be shit. You're going to be like your brothers and this and that. And I was like, fucking, how could a parent do that? You know, it was just amazing to me.
Yeah.
Too many parents do that. And it's very important to have support at home. And that's one of the main problems. Too many broken homes, too many single mothers raising kids. when that happens, kids very often grow up angry. You know, kids need support.
A lot of stealth sex.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
That's a good segue. You know, I have to tell you this story. Elaine Boozler once told me this story. The first time Jerry Seinfeld was on stage, she was emceeing at Catch a Rising Star. And it was Jerry's first night on stage, and he forgot all his material. All he remembered was his topics. So he got up there and he said, driving, the beach, whatever. And she goes, that was the master of segues, Jerry Seinfeld. That's all he had was segues. He didn't remember his material. Well, and it just came to me. We were talking about that.
Well, California also in the news announced that stealthing is now going to be an offense. It's going to be the first state to outlaw stealthing. Now, stealthing is, now you understand what this is, right, Dustin? You know what this stealthing is.
Yeah. That's why I made the joke.
Yeah. I get it.
Come on, man. That's why I popped you into, I know what's going on.
Stealthing, I think in my entire life I've only done it once. As a man, I can easily say I don't think many men like the feeling of condoms. Unless they suffer from PE, and sometimes the condom kind of keeps you from doing that. But it's not the real thing, baby, as one woman told me once. And, and that stealthing means in the middle of the act, you kind of slip it off without anybody knowing.
That's not cool. Nobody should do that. If it breaks, that's the thing. You've got to be like, where it broke, So it's hard to figure it out. Who's going to investigate that?
Could you imagine the people's court, like in Judge Judy or something, to have a case of stealthing? And the guy's like, look, man, I didn't stealth it. My dick's just so big, I broke the goddamn condom. I didn't know it was broken. I thought it felt a little warmer, but I wasn't sure.
Let's make that short. I like
it. It's like having a disease and not telling your partner.
I mean, especially if you have something, that is an offense. Like if you have something that is contagious, then that's assault.
Right, and you give it to somebody else.
That's not right. That's not right.
I don't think people take it seriously enough about the problem of pregnancy. As a father, it's a huge responsibility to have a child.
Yeah.
You can't just keep making women pregnant all over and then leaving like it's nothing. You know, a lot of girls teenage girls who want to get pregnant. They look forward to something like that. It's one of the main problems of our society. It's really bad. And I can't see why guys would even want to take a chance and do that.
And also, I have a phone that is a computer in my hand. You can't make a condom feel better at this point in 2022. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think
technology?
We can. Yeah, come on, man. We can't make a ultra condom feel a little bit better. I think we could do that. We can.
Ultra thin, yeah.
We have robots that could do somersaults. Why can't we have a condom?
It's a condom that feels a little bit better, you know? I don't know.
Not a lot to ask for.
I mean, I hate condoms so much. That's why I got married.
Exactly.
I want to fuck around.
Oh, you mean your wife trusts you? You don't have to use a condom? That's great.
Oh, yeah. Well, I just didn't want to fuck around. You know, who wants to come home I remember being single that, if you ever caught something, you're like, who are you going to blame?
IUD, man. That's a way to go.
Yeah.
Put it on.
I just think it'd be amazing to prove it. It's a law. You know, laws are great, but you have to be able to, for a law to be effective, it has to be, I think Jerry's putting, Jeffrey's putting his condom on now.
podcast with a condom. He's stealthing us right now. He's taking it off, actually.
Halfway through the podcast, Jeffrey removes his condom and doesn't tell anybody.
Well, it's a very exciting podcast. I couldn't help
it. It really is.
It held back.
Me too.
All right. To wrap up the topic segment, if you guys had the attention of the world for just 10 seconds, what would you say?
The attention of the world for 10 seconds?
10 seconds.
Be kind. Don't litter. Learn how to take a joke. Call your parents.
Mm-hmm.
People you love.
I approach the world that way. I love everybody until they teach me not to. So stop being so offended. Just relax and chill and try and enjoy this life that we're given. It's a blessing.
Yeah. And watch Squid Games. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really good show. Oh, it's fantastic. It's phenomenal. Best show.
I can't get through the first episode. There's something about it. I, better. Yeah. Maybe it gets better after the second one.
You don't like reading, maybe. I don't know. Some guys, some people don't like subtitles, but I love
that. Can be frustrating. That definitely can be frustrating.
Don't do the dubbing. You got to do subtitles. It says a lot about society, though. It's actually a really deep show. It's good.
Well, that being said, I probably would just say something like lighten up, worry about yourself, don't worry about me. I think that's the key. I think so many people are so worried about the actions of other people that they're neglectful in their own actions. You know, the hypocrisy nowadays is amazing. You know, when people, everybody's so righteous. I'm gonna do this. And then you look at their everyday life and they break code countless times.
Yeah.
It's just like, enough. Worry about yourself. Don't worry about me.
Well, I'm a big fan of pay it forward, man. Like, we need to take care of each other, and just keep that moving and stuff. I don't know. Like, you've always been nice to comics and stuff. It's like, you have to be, because people are so shitty to us, you know?
Be grateful for the things that you have.
Yeah.
You know, someone told me, I heard, happiness is wanting what you already have. And that's an interesting concept to me. You know, I write books about happiness and...
That's not easy, though. I mean, I have friends that are like famous and they're millionaires, and it's tough.
It takes a lot of work.
It does, yeah.
A lot of work.
It's
therapy.
Easy.
Therapy. Put that in there. People need therapy.
It's definitely easy, right, to always be chasing the rabbit, as they say.
It is.
You know, you're never content, and that's a good way to do it. All right, it's time. By the way, I forgot to do something here. These are things that you should know. I find this important. Hundreds of thousands of troops defy vaccine mandate. You know, these vaccine mandates is a lot of people. You know, we're going to see more and more of this, that people are saying, fuck you, I'm not going to force the mandate, thus causing more of this inflationary situation and troubles, flights delayed, all kinds of stuff.
I'll tell you a quick thing. I got a call yesterday. A girl was supposed to come visit me this weekend. And her sister passed away yesterday from the second shot of COVID, the COVID vaccine. She got one of the, in Canada, one of the mRNA shots. She's 49 years old. She got a blood clot that went to her heart and she died. And I've been hearing a lot of stories like that. And it's really crazy because I got the vaccine. My family got it. I'm not against the vaccine, but they're not telling us the truth. There's a clotting problem.
Yeah.
And there's a clotting problem with COVID. And luckily, it sounds weird to say, but luckily I had a heart attack 5 years ago and I've been on blood thinners the whole time. And it was just by accident because nobody knew in the beginning that COVID can cause blood clotting. So I think there's a lot of information that hasn't come out yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Pfizer seems better than, I think it was Moderna that was causing the problems, I think.
J&J. I don't know. My doctor said that I'm going to get a reaction no matter what I take. So I got the J&J.
I don't know. I did cocaine for about 10 years. I don't think the vaccine's going to hurt me. I've done so many bad things to my body. It's like, okay, I think I'll be okay. Can I eat a salad once in a while? I'll be all right.
Yeah.
What happened?
That's the key. Salad is what
it is. Eat something green. Keep you healthy.
Absolutely. I do it every day.
Do you guys see me? I don't see you.
We see you,
Chris.
Yeah.
Chris, are you there? Are we still good? You're going to have to edit this little bit out.
I see you.
We see you.
All right.
Great. You got a red shirt on? We see you.
Yeah. I'm going to just trudge through this. So, all right, so the other thing we all need to know is that the southern border is wide open again, and red states pulled National Guard. It seems like a lot of red states are bringing a National Guard now. They are no longer there. Hold on a second. Chris just texted me. Let me see what's going on. You're fine. Okay, good. And the last thing we all need to know, Biden administration lobbies to allow the IRS to monitor in personal business bank transactions over $600, as Jeffrey mentioned, which is, you know, people used to call Trump a tyrant. And he was all these kind of things. But I mean, when the federal government, two things now, right? When they're going to weaponize the FBI to scare the shit out of people to go into PTA meetings, and now you want to try to bring in, you know, monitor what comes in and out of my bank account, and people are not concerned about that. That's very
hiring 80,000 agents, Dougie, 80,000 IRS agents. To start monitoring everybody's bank accounts, if you put in 600 or take out more than 600, They want to know everything about it. You know that I went into Citibank. I don't know how I got this stupid bill for $1.19 on a credit card that I don't use. I went in with $1.19 and Citibank wouldn't take it. They said, we can't take cash like that. We have to put it into your checking account and then take it back out. So we show a record. I don't know what drug dealers are coming in with $1.19, but it's supposed to be to prevent drug, you know, laundering drug money.
Yeah. Well, I'm just grateful I'm grateful I'm a $500 headliner, so I don't have to worry about this. I play shitty clubs, so I'm going to be safe. I'm going to be safe. I work with Al Martin for years. I'm going to be safe. There's not going to be more than 500, I'll tell you that.
Stay at that level, right?
Yeah, almost it keeps to you the there. Point. Keeps you safe.
It's almost to the point where I'm going to pay you $599 to avoid getting the 1099. But yeah, things are concerning. All right, now it's time to the news is a joke. Let's go over some of these stories, which I have gone through. Police searching for man who allegedly took dirty diapers from Toronto daycare.
I'll tell you what disturbed me about that story. First of all, it's such a sick story, but they found out it wasn't a man. It was a young boy, and they took his name out. You're not allowed to say, if you're under a certain age, they don't say your name and who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is wrong, because there are a lot of young criminals out there. In New York City, 16-year-olds are shooting each other, and younger.
Right.
And I don't see any reason to hide their names. So this kid who stole these dirty diapers, I don't know who would want to do such a stupid thing, but they took his – there was a special piece at the end of that article, if you noticed, where it said they decided to take the picture out of the guy because they realized he was young.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, just when you think something couldn't be sexual, somebody makes something, you know, mm-hmm. like this. I assume it's sexual. Like, what else, you know? It's not like you can sell dirty diapers, you know what I mean? I'm sure it's some sort of weird, probably has a OnlyFans page at this point. But it's like, yeah, it's like, I guess people are, you know, I just found out the other day what tentacle porn was. So people are into some weird stuff. So maybe that's his thing. Yeah, maybe he's German.
In Japan, they actually have vending machines that sell panties. Yeah,
they do.
So yeah, so people are into all kinds of. I don't know about dirty diapers. I never heard that.
I'm sure some young
people are into poop.
There's some scat videos being. Now I'm sure there's some kid in Toronto that said, you know, if you put your dick in a dirty diaper, it feels just like the real thing.
Oh, geez.
And there you go.
You know what? Kids are
like anal.
Yeah. This gets you used to anal.
It's too sick. I can't even deal with it.
Yeah.
I may never sleep again.
This is a great story. A BC woman awakes to a hole in her roof and a space rock on her pillow, which she then quickly took a straw and snorted the fucking rock and put it in her crack pipe.
I read about that. It just missed her head. But, you know, I recently read this book. I brought it to show you guys, Making Contact. And it says that there are aliens that are living inside the Earth.
Yeah.
Inside of our planet. Nice. And there are three types of them. And these are scientists. This is not like lunatics. Yeah. These are scientists that claim that they're aware of this already. The government doesn't tell us that. But it's a whole book of people telling, like scientists telling stories about this, and there are three groups. They live in the core of the Earth, not where it's really hot, but underground. Yeah. And I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, I think two things. I think she needs a better roof. I don't know what kind of roof situation she has. And secondly, I bet she makes $5,000 on eBay. So, you know.
At least.
Meteorite hit Russia a few years ago. Remember that meteorite that landed in Russia?
Yeah.
I mean, people that got that, government will come and try to find that rock off right away.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, you can get a lot. But could you imagine? It's like.
Oh, that's a rough night. You're like, what the?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's terrifying. Yeah.
I think that is a fascinating theory, the inner Earth theory. And I think a few years ago, the former defense secretary of Canada came out and admitted that. One of the first real government high-ranking officials of the G7 came out and said that there are aliens. There's the tall whites. There's the, you know.
I think there's aliens. I think they're all in the ocean. I think that's where it all comes from. I think that's, I don't know if you saw The Abyss, but that's, I believe.
Yeah, you remember that great movie, by the way. And Yeah, but they say that they fly in on the polar caps where nobody can really monitor it. There's a big hole up there, and they come through, and then in the ocean, where, you know, yeah, who's out there watching the ocean?
I mean, if you ever watched an octopus, that's an alien, man. That thing is.
I think so. I think a squid.
Yeah, a squid, yeah, that's just like, come on, dude. That thing lives somewhere else, and now they're in the ocean. Yeah, absolutely.
It's translucent. It's, yeah. I mean, you know?
Yeah.
I think.
Well, one of the concepts is that life on Earth was given to us by an alien race. Because they said our DNA code is so complicated that they don't feel that it could have happened by accident. That our code is so incredible, they can't duplicate it. And they said there had to be a natural intelligence behind it. It couldn't have just happened by itself. That some higher race of beings, probably the ones that built the pyramids and the Sphinx and all. I have a friend who's a geologist who told me that the Sphinx is actually 15,000 years old, at least. He said that there are water marks on the side of the Sphinx, which means that it was submerged in water, and there hasn't been water on the desert for 15,000 years. But Egypt wants to claim that it's 5,000 years old, so they can say that they built them.
Yeah, you and know? They also found some Botox and needle marks in the Sphinx.
I just think those things are amazing. I have a very strong connection to ancient Egypt. And I actually met the guy. There's a man named J.J. Hertog who works with governments all over the world. And he claims that he's been in a spaceship, that he was abducted. And I got to meet this guy. They were filming him for a special. And I got to be one of five people who was there. And he told me that there are aliens that are living amongst us. Most of them are in Brazil. He said the good ones are the ones that are keeping us from having nuclear war. And the bad ones are the ones that are fomenting trouble around the globe. And again, I thought that was very interesting.
They all watch Fox News. Okay.
All of them.
Yeah. And then Carlson is an alien.
The real low-life aliens that are trying to fuck things up are just hecklers at comedy shows.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Here's a great story. Parents want high school principal removed for listening to Iron Maiden. Students rally behind her, and who wouldn't? Iron Maiden, one of my top rock bands. Flight of the Icarus, Die with Your Boots On. We're talking about woke people.
Is he playing it during class? Like, what's
the woman?
Is this in his car? They're like coming at him. Like, where's this
woman
being played? Where's it being played? Oh, it's a woman.
Yeah.
Where's it being played?
It's not a guy. It's not a guy. On her own time.
Yeah, it's not like she's like...
Oh, like it's a religious, like Satan music or something?
They say that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay.
There was a picture of her posing with a satanic symbol.
Oh,
and so
okay.
The parents
she's
freaked out.
Iron something. Maiden. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, my God. But is this still happening? What the... Come on. Is this,
I mean...
I wonder what they would think if she was into hip-hop.
Who doesn't love Eddie? You got to love Eddie.
Yeah, come on. I remember being a kid burning our Kiss albums in a church parking lot in Texas, you know? They thought Kiss was like Night and Satan Service and the four-minute apocalypse. And it was this whole thing, man. I was like, dude, it's just four dudes from, you know, four Jews from Queens that just were kind of ugly and found a way to be rock stars and put on makeup. And it's like, calm down.
Average musicians.
Found a way to get in it because watched a lot of Alice Cooper, you know?
It's funny that you said that. King, I was always told it was Kings in Service for Satan.
Yeah, Knights and whatever. It's always
crazy shit. But, you know, it was like Ozzy Osbourne. Remember, like, they're trying to get his music banned for Suicide Solution, and people were,
playing it backwards. Remember that? We'd play it backwards.
Yeah. And that was great. Remember the Beatles album, right? Paul is dead.
Yeah. Paul is dead. Well, number nine. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder how they would have reacted if she was into hip-hop music. You think it would have gotten the same kind of reaction?
Probably.
I don't know.
How dare you, you know? That's the thing. You can't... That's the thing I don't like. Like, we're talking about that with comedy. There's certain, like, I've said this just before all this happened about a year or two ago. You know, you can make fun in comedy. You make fun of black people, white people, Jews, fat people. You can make fun of everybody, but you can't make fun of gay people. And, that was the thing. It was, you can't do that, you know, until gay people started making fun of gay people. Yeah, I mean,
I make fun of gay people.
And like you mentioned, that's what Steve Marshall says. He goes, that's what this country's about. You come here so we can make fun of you.
Yeah. If we don't make fun of you, then we don't, that means we don't like you, you know?
Yeah. We just think you're an asshole.
Yeah, we never mention you. We really hate
There's
you.
There's nothing funny about that. Nothing funny. Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, who gives a shit what the principal does? Why are we looking at what you do? Fire her if the kids are failing their LSATs and all this other shit. You know, their testing scores are.
And what people do on their own time? Come on, dude. It's like it's one thing if she was shooting up. She's just like she's doing the metal sign against a poster of Eddie, like from Iron Maiden. Come on, man, that's ridiculous. That's some bullshit right there. Let people do what they want to do in their own time.
Absolutely. Again, if you're going to fire somebody for liking Iron Maiden, then you're setting a precedent that you should fire somebody because of their sexual preference. Then you should fire somebody because of their ideology. Then you should be able to fire somebody.
Yeah, it's not like she was listening to Barry Manilow. I mean, that I would understand.
You know? Get rid of that.
then it's okay. Then you got a point.
Yeah, instead of playing the national anthem in the morning of the Star Spangled Banner, she's playing the Flight of the Icarus.
She's not bringing it into the school. Like, come on, man.
She dresses.
She's playing in the locker room. That'll get the football team going, I'll tell you. That's what we love.
Man. That's great. Die with your boots on.
There you go.
A great story. Actor killed on stage during opera at Moscow's Bolshoi Theater.
When I heard the title, I assumed that the audience killed the guy, but that's not what happened. It was an accident.
Yeah.
Some shit fell on him and crushed him while he was on stage. But the way they write the headline was like, you know, the guy was killed, I thought, because he did a bad performance or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a tragic story, but I'm going to be honest with you. That's where I'd love to go. You know, doing what you love. I mean, I don't want to be crushed by anything, but, you know, I know there was a famous comedian that had a heart attack on stage. And, like, there's been things that have happened like that where people died in the middle of something. I don't know. I think it's like he's doing his passion and he died doing what he loved. So I think that's not the worst thing.
It was Dick Shawn.
Dick Shawn.
And it happened when he was on stage.
They thought he was joking, right? They thought he was, like, kidding.
He was joking and nobody came to help him because he used to do something like that during his act. He'd fall on the floor. So he fell on the floor.
Red Fox, too, was on his. He had the sitcom after Sanford and Son, and he was having a heart attack. And he was known for always doing that as a joke. And then he really died on set.
Oh, my God. Do you think Red Fox, when that was happening, was going, oh, shit, I better not do the same thing? He's like,
no, this is real. This is real. Elizabeth, this is a real thing.
Albert Brooks's father, they used to call him Park Your Carcass. He died at a friar's roast on the dais. Yeah, so it happens.
Wow.
It happens.
Yeah. Well, that is interesting. If you're going to go.
Not the worst thing.
Yeah, if you're going to go, right? At least go when you're doing what you love, right?
Yeah, doing what you love, right.
It'd be better than like going on Spirit Airlines or something. You know what I mean? Like you want to go like in a place where you love, you know?
You definitely don't want to die after going to a shitty gig. Nobody shows up. You get heckled. You're staying in some shitty comedy condo.
Yeah.
You're like,
or die. Or die in line at the DMV. Like, there's so many horrible places, you know, that you could die. Like, stage is pretty cool.
Absolutely. And our last story of the day, battle-hardened Taliban fighters enjoy a day off at an amusement park.
I saw that on TV. These guys were with machine guns on bumper cars. It was ridiculous. It looked like one of the films that I would make for the Weekly World News. It was such a bizarre.
I mean, you got to let off steam, you know? Like,
Ahmed, after we get off bumper cars, we go hang three people for being gay. Okay, good. Let's go get some popcorn.
Well, they used to do strip clubs, so I guess now they've moved a little more family friendly. So,
They were in Florida. Those guys who flew into the Twin Towers, they were in Florida strip club, and I think I may have remembered them once. I remember some of those because they were in that same area, like the Cheetah 3 they went to, and the Booby Trap in Pompano. Yeah. Kabul, strolling casually with their machine guns in hand, Hamidi and hundreds of fellow Taliban fighters enjoy a rare day off of the popular water slide.
Water slide.
Could you imagine they're going down with their full fucking outfit?
Holding their guns. Not in bathing suits, dressed in their battle fatigues.
Hey, Moma, are you going to the wave pool?
The lazy river. He's just on the lazy river.
The Taliban floating in the lake. Start jihad after Lazy River.
Or as Joe Biden calls them, the Taliban. You know what I mean? How come no one ever corrects him? He says the Taliban. Doesn't he hear that no one else in the world says that? Taliban.
Listen, I can only hold back so much. He's a complete fucking moron. He's brain dead. He's a puppet. It's just disgusting what's happening.
All right, that's a good way to close it out. Thanks, Jeffrey. Thanks. You know better. You know where Dougie's brain goes. You know better. Why would you drop that right then? You know what he's going to do. I don't mention politics with Dougie ever because I know where he's going to go. I'm just like, that's good.
Don't get me started, goddammit.
I know better. That's why I don't do it.
You always have that conversation with somebody. It's like a couple times agree with somebody. Somebody brought it up, and I'm like, all right, Doug, just don't get into it. Just hold back. Just get the fuck up. You know, I made a political post a few weeks ago, and a well-known comedy club, very well-known comedy club owner, just unfriended me on Facebook. I knew it had to probably do with something like that, you know. Yeah. And I reached out to the person. I said, listen, I was saddened that we're no longer friends on Facebook and stuff, but you know, I just hope that we can still be friends and blah blah blah. And it's like, yeah, it was, you know, whatever. And I said, you know, I'm not making any more posts on Facebook. If I do, I lose $1,000 by two people. So no longer have that. So there you go. Well, that's all we have time here in the Wake and Play with Doug. I want to thank you for all attending the Biden hate hour.
I'm a Ross Perot guy. I was so sad.
Oh my God! I loved Ross.
The first person I voted for.
I voted for Ross Perot.
Yeah, I read the book and everything. I was so excited.
The same reason I voted for Ross Perot. The same reason I voted for Trump. He was an outsider.
Yeah, you know, I get it.
Problem solver. You know, that kind of shit.
Just a bit reckless, but he could have reined it in a little. Oh, like, come on, just a little.
You talk about Perot, or you talk about Trump?
Talk about Trump. Just a little.
This guy would just pull that back a little bit, right? He didn't. Yeah. Who the fuck knows what happened?
You got to know your whole audience, not just the left side of the room.
That being said, let's make some predictions. Do you guys think he will run in 2024? And if he does, do you think he can win?
I don't think he'll run.
I think he's going to fake it and push DeSantis in there because...
Well, DeSantis is better than him. I think DeSantis is a better version of him. So, I think DeSantis has a shot, whereas I don't think Trump. It's too much collateral damage at this point. Even if Biden is an idiot or whatever, doesn't matter. It's too much damage.
Hey, Chris, we got Dustin recorded saying that Biden's an idiot, right, Chris? I just want to make sure. We're going to put that just a clip. It's going to be.
I didn't vote for either one of them. I voted for, you know, it's like, but I mean, technically I voted for Biden because I just, if I knock my girl up, I need an option. I don't trust Republicans. I need to know I can get an abortion if I need to. I'm Native American, so you guys are all like, you're all immigrants to me. So I don't believe in your ideology at all. Yeah. You came to my country. Get out. Everybody get out.
Go back where you came from, dude.
Biden changed, Columbus Day to Indigenous Day. So
yeah.
I'm into it.
It's your day today. I'm into it.
Yeah, let's all get a squaw and scalp the fuck out of somebody. Hey, come on now.
Easy, Tiger. Easy.
I love the American Indian play. Trust me. Anyway, like I said, that's all we have time for. Jeffrey, what do you got coming up? What are some things you want to promote?
Well, I think my two happiness books, my two books that are bestsellers on Amazon, I'll hold them up. One is called Healing Your Heart by Changing Your Mind, A Spiritual and Humorous Approach to Achieving Happiness. That was the first one. This one is called Fight the Fear, Overcoming Obstacles That Stand in Your Way. And it's, you know, we're all engulfed in fear, man. So when this came out, it came out as a number one release in about five different categories. And so that's what I'm putting time in. I have a third one coming out very soon called Facing Adversity, but I'll tell you about that the next time I'm on.
Very good.
So those books are available on Amazon as an ebook, as an audio book, and as a paperback.
Paperback, right?
Thanks, Dougie. Good to be on with you.
Dustin?
Yeah, well, follow me on all the social media at Dustin_Chapin. Go to my website for tour dates in L.A. I'll be at the Roosevelt Hotel performing this weekend. I'm on tour with T.J. Miller and also with Nate Bargatze. Check out those dates on my website. It'll be coming up soon. And, yeah, I got two albums that are out there. And also I'm doing this thing called Write Club, where we interview people, famous comedians, and then we people from the industry. This time around, I have like Lori Kilmartin, Rick Dorfman, and all these great comedians and actors. And then we also, we write certain nights, and then we kind of do a Q&A with these people. So it's kind of this kind of just the advanced level of kind of, you know, comedians trying to get better. It's not a class. It's more like just comics helping each other. We tag each other's bits, and then we get to hear some of the best of the best talk to us. So that's called Write Club. Check that out. You can go to my Facebook page. Check it out.
Very good.
Sounds great. I forgot to mention my Comedy Matters TV. So thanks for inviting me. I forgot all about my YouTube channel.
You can't go back in on your credit.
Yeah, what the fuck?
You had your three minutes. Yeah, come on. Hilarious. I love it.
Comedy Matters TV.
Comedy Matters TV. Yeah, check it out.
Comedy Matters. I'm into it.
There you go. And as for me, I'll be at the Fort Wayne Comedy Club this weekend, Friday and Saturday, headlining. Please come out to the show so I get paid. That's all I got to say. Just show up and follow me at Dougie Dangerous on Instagram and on TikTok at Funny Fiduciary. Which is exciting new stuff coming out eventually with some, you mentioned schools, but maybe looking at doing APCA work where you're not doing comedy in colleges, but I'm doing seminars on financial planning and the importance of wealth preservation.
That's great. That's what it needs. That's what we need.
But that's all, guys. Thank you so much for watching us. Don't forget to follow our show on Twitter at Wake Up Dougie and on Instagram at The Wake Up Late with Dougie Show, and join our fan pages on YouTube and, of course, our channel on YouTube and, of course, our fan page on Facebook where this airs every week on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Thanks, guys, so much for joining us. Miss you guys both. Hope to get to see you soon.
Yes.
And be good out there, fellas. And we'll see you next time right here at the same spot. Take care, America.
Woo, lazy river.
Come on, Dustin. Take care.
Don't be hard. Let's just float the
river. Be hard, lazy river.